Ray McGovern is a retired CIA officer who holds an MA in Russian studies from Fordham, a certificate in theological studies from Georgetown, graduate of Harvard's Business School Advanced Management Program. He served as a CIA analyst from 1963 to 1990, and in the 1980s he chaired the National Intelligence Estimates and prepared the President's Daily Brief and received the Intelligence Commendation Medal at his retirement. In 2003, he co-founded Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity, or VIPS, VIPS, and he frequently is called upon to comment on intelligence issues that challenge our collective sanity, which seem to be occurring on a daily basis. So welcome once again, Ray McGovern, to Takes on the World.
Thanks very much.
You know, on July 22nd, the Intelligence Veterans for Sanity sent a letter to President Obama, reminding him that a year earlier, your group had asked the White House to release whatever information it had on the downing of Malaysian Airlines Flight 17, and it received no response, hence a second letter. And you expressed concerns about what this implication of the downing of Flight 17 would mean beyond finding the guilty party. Perhaps you could explain those concerns.
Sure. The downing of that Malaysian aircraft, killing 298 people, was seized upon in a rush to judgment by John Kerry and the White House, accusing Russia or so-called Russia-supported separatists of having perpetrated this crime. The evidence was very elusive. Social media, in my day, we didn't rely on social media or even on social media to make judgments like this. And so it was seized upon and used by the U.S. administration to browbeat the Europeans into instituting sanctions. So big deal, very consequential thing. And indeed, they bowed and they instituted sanctions against Russia. So it was a consequential pronouncement. Whether it was true or not is not clear. What Kerry did 3 days after the shootdown, so shootdown was the 17th of July, so 3 days later, the Sunday, when they had Sunday talk shows, he appeared on every one of them and very broadly accused the pro-Russian separatists, as they call them. The right term would be anti-coup federalists, but this is the jargon used by the mainstream press. The rebels, let's call them. The rebels were accused of having done it. Talk about poisoning the jury pool. You know, talk about rushing to judgment. Well, Kerry said all those things 3 days after, and even the kind of meek mainstream press started asking, well, social media? I mean, hello? Is that all you got, you know? And so 2 days after, in other words, we're Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, that would have been the 22nd of July, the Director of National Intelligence authorized some of his briefers to brief a select group of favored journalists and laid out what they had, which was not much more than social media. So the die was cast, though, and since the Russians and the pro-Russian people were accused of this, the sanctions were imposed, and this was the sort of electric moment that got to the Europeans behind Victoria Nuland and other people at the U.S. State Department who wanted to accuse the Russians of doing this. Now, the long story short, after a year, we thought it only appropriate to ask the president why he had not responded to our memorandum of the year before and why it is that his people are putting out the word that in the intervening year, nothing further has been learned about who shot down. There's no better evidence than what they had with the social media sort of stuff. So he, of course, he didn't answer us. He very seldom does. But the idea is, in my view, that if there is conclusive evidence that the anti-aircraft missile or whatever shot down that plane, I would fully expect the U.S. to come forward immediately with that evidence, or if not immediately, at least a week or two later, out of a decent respect for the opinions of mankind. It has not done. Instead, after my co-worker, Robert Perry, has asked the Director of National Intelligence people repeatedly, don't you have anything more than you did on July 20th or 22nd of last year? And they say with a straight face, no, no, we haven't learned a thing. And Bob, in his understated way, says, well, that's not credible. It's not credible. It's just not anything. So what's my conclusion? Well, at the very least, the information that we have now, and I'm 90% sure that U.S. intelligence had and has the capability to figure out what happened, who shut down that passenger plane. The reluctance of the U.S. administration to release the information it has suggests to me strongly that the information that it has does not support what John Kerry said many times on all those TV talk shows 3 days after the shootdown.
Well, by coincidence, today's New York Times has a report that Dutch prosecutors had found what could be pieces of a Russian surface-to-air missile in the area where the plane was down, but they did not attribute the blame to either side. And it's known that both sides had access to, or might have had access to, the same BUK missile that the Russians use. So it's interesting that the accusations come from the American side, but the European inspectors who have been over there, and I should parenthetically say, I remember listening to President Obama describe how the East Ukrainians were not allowing inspectors from Europe to come into the area where the plane had been down, while I was watching on RT, Russian television, European inspectors in the area looking at the fuselage of the plane that had been down. So the kind of propaganda that we have been getting on this issue, and you talk about it, because Russia is a nuclear-armed country, we are in danger of getting another Cold War and maybe even a shooting war with some Dr. Strangeloves in the house. This seems to be something that should be on the minds of Americans with at least who haven't lost their memories by listening too much to their smartphones or looking at them too much.
Yeah, you know, when we talk about these things, the first sentence always has to be Russian-made surface-to-air missile system. Well, hello, what do the Ukrainians have? The Ukrainian army. They have Russian-made surface-to-air missile systems. So most Americans, once they see Russian, they immediately say, well, there's additional evidence of what Kerry said was correct. The business here about who shot down the aircraft, it's hopelessly kind of slanted in favor of blaming the Russians and the pro-Russian rebels, so to speak. Andrew Kramer and Michael Gordon and that whole crew. Now, look at this one report. Well, you know, it's prejudiced in favor of, there's slight things here that disparage what the Russians have said and the talk about. It's not as bad as some of them, but it's pretty bad. And what I'm saying here is that Americans don't have a good idea as to the uncertainties that attend all this and the importance, because if it became known, as I believe inevitably it will, that it was not the rebels and it was not Russia, but rather some rogue element or even some authorized element of the Ukrainian army, which has these missiles, okay, then, you know, what happens to the sanctions? What happens to the Europeans who have suffered under the sanctions? After all, you know, these are two-way street now. The Russians have imposed their own sanctions. And so they'll be held to pay if it ever comes out as I think it probably will, that the U.S. has been disingenuous, shall we say, in blaming the pro-Russian separatists, so to speak, or the Russians themselves. You know, one of the things that this reminds me of, Jeff, very clearly, is the shootdown of KAL-007 on September 1st, 1983. I was around then. I was a Russian analyst, an analyst of Russian studies, Russian policy, actually. And so I was watching this very closely. And it struck me at the time that this dog and pony show that we put up at the UN was not the full picture, okay? And guess what? My suspicions were right, but they only came to be confirmed about 10 or 15 years after the fact. What happened, of course, was I think there were 269 passengers aboard this KAL flight, and it had flown over Russian territory on the same kind of arc as had been used by a U.S. spy plane a couple hours before. It was dark. The control center didn't know what this plane was, sent up jet fighters to intercept it. There was no reaction when the fighters tried to force it down to land, and so the pilot was given the orders to shoot, which he did, and knocked down the plane. So there's no dispute as to who knocked down the plane. The question is, did the Russians deliberately shoot down this plane knowing that it was a passenger aircraft? And that's what we accused them of, because it was 1983, Reagan was on his evil empire binge, and Secretary Shultz, to his discredit, wanted to be part of the team, you know, didn't want to be less anti-Soviet than Weinberger, and so he led the charge, and he had his State Department deliberately spy the intercepted messages that he accused the Russians of deliberately, okay, deliberately shooting down a passenger aircraft. How did I learn that? Well, the fellow at the State Department, his name is Alvin A. Snyder. Okay, he was head of the radio, TV, you know, section of what used to be a USIA part of the State Department, U.S. Information Agency. Okay, and what did he do? Well, he complained. He wrote a book. The book is Disinformation. And, I mean, that's the title of it. He wrote this book, and he said, you know, I finally got a chance to listen to the whole 50 minutes of this pilot control tower and vice versa conversation. And it's clear to me that the pilot, neither the pilot nor the control tower, knew this was a passenger plane. But they only gave me 8 minutes, and those 8 minutes are bereft of any indication that the Russians didn't know that it was a passenger plane. So, now, one would have thought that there would be a certain contrition or, you know, sort of regret expressed by Alvin A. Snyder, but quite the contrary. His conclusion, and this is a quote, "All nations lie, including our own. The most important thing to realize is he who lies first wins," end quote. Whoa, so why did Kerry get up there and be the first off the blocks? Well, my suspicion is that it was the same kind of atmosphere as in 1983, when the primary target for blackening was the Soviet Union earlier and Russia now, Putin. So Kerry lit into him. Now, I just add one thing, and that is that Putin, in my view, has been very restrained in all this, okay? Now, there was one instance in where he didn't contain himself. It is very unusual for a Russian president or a Russian premier or first secretary to call the head of state or foreign minister or secretary of state of another country a liar. But Putin did precisely that. As Obama arrived in St. Petersburg for one of those little summits, right? That same day, Putin got up and said, you know, Kerry, он врет, он знает, что врет, это печально, which means he lies, he knows he's lying. That is really unfortunate. The That's unique. I've watched Russia and the Soviet Union for 52 years. I have never, despite the harshest of times, I've never seen a Russian or a Soviet leader call a U.S. Secretary of State a liar right when the President of the United States is arriving in Petersburg for a summit. So Kerry doesn't have much credibility when he gets up and charges things like this, and so that adds to my mistrust. The last thing I'll say about this last report about the Dutch having found this, well, you know, I'm reminded of Shakespeare talking about the Danes. You know, there's something rotten in Denmark. There's something very rotten in the Netherlands, too. They are not being upfront about what they have. They gave the black boxes to the British. Now, I wonder why they gave the black boxes to the British. Well, somebody ought to ask them that. And the chain of custody is what's important here. I don't know how they got these things or when they got them. And unless there's a proven chain of custody, then there's all manner of opportunity for manipulation or for discrediting the other side. So this latest report means absolutely nothing to me. What I need is U.S. intelligence to come out and tell us what they have, because, as I said before, I'm 95% sure that U.S. intelligence knows exactly who shot that plane down.
You brought up the black boxes. I remember being, I still am capable of being amazed. I was amazed to read that the Dutch had turned the black boxes over to the British. Have we heard what's on the black boxes or in the black boxes?
No, curiously enough. You know, usually it takes about 2 weeks to open the box and see what's in there. No, unfortunately, we've got very ephemeral kind of no conclusive information. You know, I'm Irish, and so I have to be careful about being prejudiced against the British. But I do remember what my grandfather said to me one time. He said, "Raymond, do you know why the sun never sets on the British Empire?" And I said, "Sure." And I, "No, you don't know." He said, "Now sit down and I'll tell you. The sun never sets on the British Empire because the good Lord would never trust the British in the dark." Well, I don't trust the British with the black boxes.
It is interesting that there has not been any press questioning. No, it isn't interesting. The press is so dog-like, dog in the manger, like in this country, having learned nothing from their complicity with the Iraq War, that we see the same thing. And you mentioned about telling the first lie about the situation with the Iran agreement. I mean, we just had 29 scientists who know something about nuclear proliferation come out and endorse the agreement. Gary Seymour, I think it's pronounced his name, who founded something called the United Against Nuclear Iran, has just resigned from the organization because he supports the agreement, and he was the president, and has kind of been taken out from under him and has become another Israel front organization. And Joe Lieberman, that great expert on nuclear weaponry and making war, has now replaced him as the president, and they're running huge ads, and a video rather, in Times Square praising Chuck Schumer for essentially betraying his country. It's astonishing what is going on. But the big lie that somehow Iran is a big winner on this and is going to have nuclear weapons at any day now and could cheat, and we should have 24/7 accessibility to any Iranian military base, which means they have no sovereignty left whatsoever. But of course, that's their goal. It's mind-blowing how we were seeing the Iraq situation all over again. Maybe you comment on that.
Well, on this issue, it's really the Israel lobby that is stoking the fires of opposition to this very, very good accord. Seymour, to his credit, just couldn't stay in this position. He saw that the accord was good. He said that we'll emerge in a stronger position, certainly than if Congress rejected it. And here's a little quote from him. He says, "We've bought a couple of years, and if Iran cheats or reneges, will be in a better position to double down on sanctions or even use military force. If I knew for certain that in 5 years Iran would cheat or renege, I'd still take the deal, period, end quote. Well, this guy is an expert. He's also very pro-Israel, and he just couldn't abide this opposition. Now, Joe Lieberman, here's another. He's the epitome of a pro-Israel lobbyist. Now, I had a personal experience with Joe Lieberman not too long ago. It was September of 2013. Recall that we were about to make war on Syria. There had been some chemical attacks outside Damascus, and Bashar al-Assad was being blamed for launching these attacks. Now, the evidence was very sketchy. Guess what plays the prominent role? Yeah, you got it. Social media. And pictures and photos that of dubious provenance, let us say, all right? Now, again, John Kerry got up, poisoning the jury pool, and said 35 times on the afternoon of August 30th, 2013, Bashar al-Assad's government did this, Bashar al-Assad did this. You, Mr. President Obama, have said that there's a red line. If they used or threatened to use chemical weapons, you would change your mind about not invading Syria. So what are you going to do? What are you going to do? You know, 35 times he blamed it on Bashar al-Assad's government. So that's at the State Department in a two-hour press conference on the afternoon of August 30th, 2013. Now, that evening, somebody got to Obama. And what they told him, and I'm pretty sure it was Martin Dempsey, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. I wasn't a fly on the wall here, but this is pretty much what I think Dempsey told him. Mr. President, John Kerry, is really good about driving boats up the Mekong, but he's not a very good military strategist. So I'm supposed to give you the military advice here, and this is what I have to tell you. It is very doubtful that it was Bashar al-Assad who fired those chemical agents for the, for whatever they were. They were not the kind of strain of sarin gas that we know is in Syrian army stocks. Matter of fact, the British got a sample, and they've told me that. This is a weird kind of homemade sarin, and it looks like it could be the rebels. So that's number one, Mr. President. Number two, the UN inspectors are coming back from Damascus in 2 days, and I'm going to be asked, General Dempsey, why is it that you could not have waited for the UN inspectors to come back from Damascus and give you an authoritative read on who fired those sarin attacks there? And I'm going to have to say, beats the hell out of me, go ask the president. Now, Mr. President, you should know that we're in position to do whatever you order. We have four frigates. We have missile people right out there in the Mediterranean and aircraft. Actually, the French have some fighter craft right on the tarmac, right out there, warming them with their engines. But, Mr. President, you should know that we don't have to do this today. We don't have to do it tomorrow or next week. We'll be in a position. And, Mr. President, I've told the press that I would not launch a major war, a new war, without congressional authorization. And I'm thinking about that now, okay? So what happens? I'm out in front of the White House in the morning, Saturday morning, 31st of August. There are 1,000 of us were saying, don't bomb Syria. We're convinced that when the president gets up in the Rose Garden, he's going to announce, we have five warships in the Eastern Mediterranean, and I've just ordered, blah, 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 blah. Instead, what does he say? He says, I've just talked to the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and he tells me we're ready to retaliate for this, but we don't have to do it today or tomorrow or next week. We're in position, and I have decided to go to Congress for authorization for this. Wow. I could hardly believe it. I was next up to speak at this rally, and I had to say, if this is true, if, but it was true. Now, Why do I mention all that? Well, the neocons, Joe Lieberman in particular, they were up in arms. They were deprived of their war. Why did they want the war? Well, the explanation came in a very interesting report by Jody Ruderin, who is a New York Times bureau chief in Jerusalem. She wasn't very, very acquainted with the niceties of these things, and it looked like there was going to be an attack on Syria. So she asked her interlocutors. She sought out some Israeli officials, and she said, "Now, with respect to Syria, what is your preference as to how it comes out?" And the answer was no solution. And she said, "I beg your pardon?" And they said, "No solution." And she said, "Why is that?" And they said, "Well, right now, the Shia and Sunni are killing each other off, not only in Syria, but in the whole area. And we Israelis feel a lot safer when this is the kind of thing that's going on. What was beginning to happen in early 2013 was Assad was beginning to win. He was pushing the rebels out of some of their strongholds, and it looked like he might win, and we don't want anyone to win. Now, this sounds pretty bad," they said, "but this is the way it is. As long as no one wins, we win." And she reported it in the New York Times. And that was the Joe Lieberman cut on this. Now, I happen to be on the top of the CNN building the next Monday. Okay, I was interviewed for CNN International, and as I opened the door from the booth that I was in, I almost knocked over this little guy. And I looked, and it was Paul Wolfowitz. Okay, and I looked across the room, and there was Joe Lieberman. And so I said, "This is going to be interesting." Well, they're watching some of their own commentators, you know, and they're cheering for them. And then they go into their own room, and they have their own interview, in the course of which Joe Lieberman says, "This is a despicable, cowardly act that the president has done. He doesn't need authorization from Congress to launch these kinds of wars. What's going on here?" And I'm watching this, and I'm saying to myself, whoa, these guys looked, when I first saw them, like their mothers had just been run over by a truck, you know. They looked so downtrodden, so dispirited. They had been cheated out of their war, out of U.S. military involvement in Syria. And then Lieberman says that thing on the interview. So what I did was, I always carry a copy of the Constitution with me. I tore out the Article 1 where it says only Congress can authorize a war or can declare a war or otherwise authorize it. And so I marked it up, and I met them, as I knew I would, in this really fancy elevator, wherever, you know, four elevator place there. And yeah, maybe you have to be from Washington to know how this works, but you know, politicians can't possibly be embarrassed by not remembering somebody they should know, you know. So I say, "Hey, Paul, Joe, so good to see you." And they were a bit cautious, but they stuck out their hand. And said, Ray McGovern. Oh, yes, right, yeah. "Joe, I couldn't believe what you just said there in the studio. So I ripped out Article 1 of the Constitution here. I don't want to belabor it now, but, you know, you've been Congress for how many years, 30 years or so? And you don't know that only Congress can..." So here, you take that. Wolfowitz is edging his way out the door. And then came the 6-foot-tall, very beautiful Miss America, who was their escort and was supposed to prevent precisely this kind of thing from happening. And she looks, she sizes up the situation, and she says, "Oh, gentlemen, I'm so sorry." "I'm really sorry, too. Two clowns on your show when they don't even know what's in the Constitution." And it went downhill from there. The point of all this is simply that I have never seen, except for, you know, real tragic funerals, the looks on Lieberman's and Wolfowitz's face and their acerbic castigation of the President of the United States for chickening out on the war that he swore to make as long as that red line was mousetrapped, and that's what they did. I'm convinced that this was a plot, this was a false flag attack. They used the wrong kind of sarin, or else we'd never know. But what they wanted to do is get the U.S. forces actually engaged in Syria, very much like the CIA wanted to get U.S. forces involved in Cuba when they launched that inept little attempt at the Bay of Pigs in 1959, I guess it was. So, no, 1961. So, anyhow, it was a real eye-opener. And when you look at Joe Lieberman heading up, as you say, he's an eminent nuclear scientist, among other things. I say that in jest. You know, it's really pretty bad. And when these retired generals and admirals and when these very renowned scientists speak up, well, you know, let's see if they get a fair shake on what we call the mainstream media, because the mainstream media is hopelessly influenced by the pro-Israel lobby, and it could be that most Americans will be deprived of the understanding of what this deal could mean. And, you know, for Israel to feign fear that Iran's going to attack them or something, well, how many nuclear weapons does Israel have? You know, 100, 200? Nobody knows. They do have them. Everyone knows.
You can't talk about it. They're never asked about it.
Now, I hope I can talk about that on your show.
Yes, you can. It's a
so, you know, it's all kind of... And, you know, getting back to basics here, and I just think we really need to underline this. After the debacle on Iraq, when my former colleagues in analysis, I'm not talking about operation, I'm talking about analysis, discharged Bush and Cheney's order to fabricate intelligence to justify a war of aggression. And that's what it was, the intelligence was not mistaken, mind you. It was fraud, okay? After that, they decided to do an honest estimate on Iran. They got a guy in from the State Department named Tom Finger. He worked all during 2007. In November 2007, issued a national intelligence estimate, unanimously agreed to by 16 U.S. intelligence agencies, quote, with high confidence, end quote, first conclusion of which was, Iran stopped working on a nuclear weapon at the end of 2003 and has not resumed work on a nuclear weapon, end quote. Okay? Now, that judgment has been reaffirmed and revalidated every year since. So that's 12 years, over 11 years so far, okay? Now, if that's the case, you have this surreal situation where we were demanding, and the other Western powers were demanding, and everyone was demanding, look, Tehran, you stop working on that nuclear weapon that we know you haven't been working on for 12 years. Well, you know, if that's what it takes, Jeff, I'm for it, you know. I mean, if people have to pretend that this is a terrific masterstroke, if people have to pretend that the supreme injunction called the fatwa in Islamic code, which Khomeini and all the others said, we will not develop or use weapons of mass destruction. Okay. If they think that's irrelevant, sort of like a papal encyclical, well, they're free to do that. But the reality is that when Iraq used chemical weapons against Iran and killed hundreds of thousands, Iran was still under this fatwa, this edict, and did not manufacture, did not use chemical weapons in retaliation. So there's a little bit of the substance behind that fatwa, and people ought to realize that as well. So it's a great deal. The only thing that Israel suffers here is the lifting of sanctions on Iran, and that will make it more difficult for Israel and the United States to dominate that part of the world, which, of course, is the name of the game.
Well, Ray, you've outlined it beautifully. We've come down to another enlightening experience of having you on the KZYX airwaves, and do appreciate it. How can people read your writings? What's the best way? I know you write for Consortium News. What's the best way to reach for people to read your comments?
My youngest son did a website for me. It's called raymcgovern.com. Very easy. And I write for Consortium News first, because I think Bob Perry is the best in the business, And then I put the link immediately on my own website, together with links to my interviews, to my talks, and that kind of thing. So reemcgovern.com would be the best way.
Well, Ray, thanks so much again for being our guest today on Takes on the World. I'm looking forward to the next time.
You're most welcome, Jeff.
Take care.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.